Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in to today's podcast. So today we're discussing something which all of us are guilty of doing. I don't know if guilty is too strong a word here, but which everybody does, and that is feeling nostalgia for older pop culture, specifically for like 90s and 2000s content. So we're going to be talking about where that nostalgia comes from, and whether it's worth glorifying problematic movies and TV shows. So, to start off with, let's talk about where the idea for this came from. Rajvi, do you want to talk about that a little bit? This is Shishti, your host, by the way.
Hey, this is Rajvi, the co-producer of Respectfully Disagree. So we thought about this because, you know, actress Kat On is in the news right now. She was cast as like a side plot thing in an episode of The Office called The Benihana Christmas. If I'm sure, I don't know people who follow The Office, of whom there are a lot in the world, they probably know this, but essentially it's an episode where Michael Scott, Steve Carell's character, they go to Benihana, which is kind of like an Asian food restaurant, I think in many parts of the US. He brings over to The Office two Asian American women, he's flirting with one, and then he gets drunk, I think, and then he kind of doesn't remember which one he was flirting with, so he puts a mark, like he puts like a mark with a marker on one person's hand, so he can kind of like differentiate between the two. And this, you know, like feeds into the stereotype that for white people, like all Asian people look the same. So this actress, she now comes out and she says that she was cast just to be a joke, and because she was a struggling actress at that point, like it was very difficult for someone like her to speak up, even though she could identify what was happening was quite racist. The actresses who played Pam and Angela in the show, they have their own podcast called Office Ladies. They themselves said that such an episode wouldn't have been made in today's time. So that's essentially the controversy around it. Do you guys remember the episode that this is about?
I'm gonna sound like a bro, but I think it was that period of time in television where you could make a joke in which the audience and everybody was in on something racist happening, and everybody was clear about the fact that the person who was being laughed at was the racist person. So, like, for example, in a show like The Office, you're not laughing at, like, the person labeling, like, a woman as Asian 1 or Asian 2. You're laughing at Michael Scott doing that dumb shit because he's Michael Scott. But I wouldn't go so far as to say that a lot of the, like, every show ever that, like, tokenized characters did it unintentionally. Like, some of them were done very intentionally to show off the fact that tokenizing happens. And I think this episode was one of those.
Yeah, Aditi, I agree with you in the sense that in the show, you're definitely seeing Michael Scott as the character in that episode, as somebody who is bigoted, as somebody who is ignorant, as someone who, you know, is from a small town in Pennsylvania and hasn't really been outside anywhere, acts kind of accordingly. I think a major critique of this episode has also been that his character does not necessarily suffer any consequences for what he did, in the sense that I think the only person he tells in the show, in the episode, is Jim. Jim kind of just laughs kind of incredulously at like what Michael did, but that's kind of the extent of whatever happens, and then you kind of forget about it. Then when this actress comes out, right, like from her perspective as somebody who's behind the scenes, who's someone who was cast for just this, it also kind of speaks to like what she as a professional was allowed to do and what she was kind of reduced to, just to be able to get like 10 minutes of whatever in a show that was wildly popular. But I mean, The Office has like many, many, many critiques like this, right? It's like fat phobic, transphobic, homophobic, and not just once or twice, but like again and again and again. So when like every other episode kind of touches on some part of this constantly without much consequences for the characters involved, then I'm not sure that the self-awareness that we're talking about, like the knowing it, the insider part with the audience, like stands anymore. Because then it's just kind of like you do this for laughs, and then you get away with it by doing like a sly wink to the audience. But is that sly wink enough?
I never watched The Office personally at all, but like I have indulged in a lot of problematic other content of that time, which I still love, like Friends or lots of other shows from 90s and 2000s. But I'm just wondering that, do you think the people who watch this now and engage in 90s and 2000s nostalgia from, say, our generation, do you feel like they're aware of all of this criticism of these shows? And then how do you engage with that then? Why do you continue to watch it if you know this criticism exists? Does it not make you uncomfortable when you're watching that particular show? I'm just wondering.
So I think, yeah, of course it does, right? And I think it's a part of like when also somebody started watching it. Like, for example, I started watching Friends or The Office when I was quite young, growing up in a small town, had no idea of anything social justice related or just any idea of what my opinions were about things. And then, like, I started watching these shows more as just kind of like a look into what, like, American life looks like, or a look into, okay, now I can understand American English wala accent, you know. So I think it depends on when somebody starts watching the show, and when if it's relatively young, then I feel like the possibility is higher of watching it from a non-critical lens. But then when that becomes a habit that's rooted in nostalgia, then it's hard to reconcile when you do actually figure out what's wrong with it. And depending on the kind of person you are, I think one wins out over the other. But I think nostalgia usually wins out. Even though you can sit and like be cringing at it, but that might not be reason enough to stop watching it altogether.
Yeah, like, plus another reason to watch shows like these, like, for example, The Office only recently dethroned Friends as the most, like, mentioned TV show in dating app bios in India, source me. So, yeah, and, like, from that, you can sort of infer that there's been a sudden rise in people liking this type of TV. Before, it was, like, a lot of people liking Friends and talking about it. So, like, looking at these shows was almost a form of like having a certain amount of cultural capital. Like, look at me, I enjoy what a lot of people think is good TV, like interesting TV or something like that. And it's not nostalgia for them, it's more like, this is TV and I enjoy it, so I'm gonna watch it. So they're not gonna, a lot of people aren't gonna be aware of the critiques put in place. And for the people who are aware of the critiques put in place, I think there's two justifications. Either you're a bro and you actually think those awful things are funny, or you sort of look at it from the perspective of a person sort of laughing at the racist rather than the person who was being racially compromised.
So this is interesting, Aditi, that you say this, because I was reading like a few reviews of The Office from back then, right? And I think it premiered in the US in like 2005, like so mid or early 2000s. Okay, so it is a show, according to like a Wall Street Journal breakdown of Netflix viewership, that like 3% of all user minutes on Netflix are minutes dedicated to watching The Office. So that kind of amounts to 52 billion minutes, which is an insane amount. When it first started, The Office was considered quite experimental for a sitcom, right? It broke the fourth wall. It was one of the first to do that. There was no laugh track, which was a very big deal at that time for sitcoms. It didn't have like conventionally beautiful people as its like main characters. And then the main thing was that it embraced like mundanity and boredom in a way that no other show at that time, critics thought, had ever. So it's like that the fact that it didn't try to make like life exciting, but it kind of just showed people like going through their lives, and you know, they're not super happy and they have these humdrum jobs and whatever, but they kind of get by with pranks and crushes and this and that, whatever. So in the sense that I think it quickly became something that was mainstream, it quickly became something that was liked by most people, quickly became something that a lot of people considered like a personality trait for like liking. But even when it started, like, it was still something that was not cool, you know, but in it not being cool, it became cool for certain people.
It's interesting that you brought up reviews from that time itself, right? Because one big justification that people give for these shows is that it belongs to a certain time and it's representative of that time. And so that's how people kind of deal with this critique of, say, you know, a lack of people of color on your cast who are not, you know, there for a 10-minute joke. But what do you think about that excuse? Like, how do you, not excuse, but it's an argument. How do you kind of reconcile that?
So Friends has a big problem about this, right? Like, the one major critique of Friends is that it has no, like, black actors, or it has no, like, Latin American actors who have, like, a big role. They are always kind of either the butt of some joke, or they come for, like, an episode or two and then they leave. But it has, like, a majorly white cast. And the argument that you gave, like, Lisa Kudrow, who plays Phoebe on Friends, like, she said the same thing, to look at the show as a time capsule, as a product of its time. And to be honest, like, I see a little bit of it there. Like, if you see New York City in the 90s, I mean, is it hard to imagine that a group of white people can be insular and exclusive to people of color? Like, it's not hard to imagine, right? Like, that shit still happens here. So I think the argument makes sense for not, like, banning the show or canceling the show, if such a thing can even happen at this stage.
But I don't know, Rajvi. Like, I think it also shows in, not just in the main cast. Like, okay, I agree that you can have a group of friends who are insular, who are, like, I mean, you see it all the time, even here, right? Like, in how, say, you'd be friends with only Savarna people or a certain kind, whatever. That is there. And that's the truth even today. But I think it's also about the kind of city that it shows you, right? And how come the people you date, even on the people you date, how come there's, like, this overwhelming trend? How come even in the cafe, like, people sitting behind you, there's an overwhelming trend? Like, for instance, growing up, when I was younger and there were only these shows which had, like, all white cast, I literally thought that all of America is white. I'm not even kidding. Like, that was my perception of that place, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. But I thought American means white person, like, they're interchangeable. So, I mean...
But, like, I fundamentally disagree with the fact the... argument that, like, these shows are a capsule of their time, right? Like, for example, look at coming back to The Office. You look at something like the relationship between the guy who plays, what's that guy's name, Ryan or something, and the girl who plays Kelly Kapoor, right? So it's basically Mindy Kaling and the other guy who is her friend.
The guy who plays Ryan.
Yeah, the guy who plays Ryan. So, like, just, yeah, so, like, it's a very unique and sub... It's one of those things where it's just, like, Mindy Kaling is not conventionally beautiful, but, like, the show does not even pay attention to the fact, like, pay attention to her appearance. It's just that she's attractive and she's entitled to this very attractive boy because she's attractive and, like, she's also has, like, a very... She has a slightly nonsensical personality, like slightly loopy personality, and that's even justified just because... So that was really interesting, right? Because then you see, like, a woman of color who's completely allowed to be whoever she wants to be, and then she snags this dude, and or this dude snags her, because I can't even remember his name.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you, and that's really interesting. I also feel like there are these few shows which we're nostalgic about, which have this status in our pop culture. But that doesn't mean that they represent all of 90s and 2000s, you know. Like, for instance, someone like Shonda Rhimes. And I think it makes a big difference who's behind the camera making the decision, right? If you look at a show like Grey's Anatomy, which I have rewatched during the lockdown.
Same.
Oh, great. And I just look at that show and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, why didn't I watch more of this growing up? Or why didn't I internalize some of these things, you know? And... Shonda Rhimes, like, famously does color blind casting, so she doesn't really explore race dynamics within most of her shows, but there's color blind casting, and I think that's also a really interesting choice because it lets you see whoever you want to see yourself in different characters, and it shows you a world which is more representative of the world that you'd see, right?
I can actually substantiate that with examples. Like, for example, you can see Christina struggling with her unique identity. Like, she's half Jewish, half Korean. Like, the show is showing you those struggles, but they're not telling you about it and making it very obvious. But then you have a more 2020 type show like The Good Doctor, which is basically about a young neuroatypical doctor who has, like, this thing called savant syndrome, where he's, like, genius, but he's, like, also autistic. So, the problem with that show is that it has a lot of people of color as characters, but like the genius Asian surgeon character is almost always like talking about the struggle she faces as a woman of color. And I'm just like, I know, I can see. Like, I am seeing it right in front of me. Like, you mention it all the time. So it's a bit like, I mean, it's a bit obvious.
Yeah, like with Grey's Anatomy, sorry, I don't know if we should do, I think Grey's Anatomy is like different in the sense that like the show also evolved through time, right? So like if it started in the early 2000s or whenever, and now like up until very recently, I mean, the seasons still kept coming out, right? It became more and more like identity politics-y, like the later you go in the show. So I think that's also a product of its time or whatever, that people thought this is what we're supposed to focus on, this is what our characters should say to each other, and stuff like that. Like, but I agree with you, Shrishti, on one point that you made, that like it really matters who's behind the scenes. Like the co-creator of Friends, right, Marta Kaufman, she's white. Like she has talked at length about how she didn't do enough to promote racial diversity in the show, and I'm quoting her right now, I just wish I knew then what I know now, I would have made very different decisions. But I think you have to question if she would have, you know, because like maybe it would be to pay lip service to whatever the Friends demographic like audience is right now. But I think it would be pretty impossible for like a white creator to make something that is truly representative when they're still creating it from the lens of their own like upbringing and their own environment.
Yeah, I think that's why having like writers' rooms which are diverse or representative is very important, because I think those really shape narratives, or those really, like I think you mentioned Mindy Kaling's character in The Office, Aditi, and that particular dynamic. I think that kind of stuff comes out when you have a more diverse writers' room, right? Like I think with 30 Rock, for instance, which is also around, I think, the same time period, like 2005, 2006. Types, and I haven't rewatched it recently, so I can't say, but I rewatched it like 4-5 years ago, and there again I felt like it was very interesting, because I think it had a diverse cast and never played into stereotypes, because it had a diverse writing room as well, which included Donald Glover. So I think that's super interesting to me, and honestly that's something that in India, to forget, we can have this conversation about like nostalgic content which is like Western, but yahan pe people don't do due diligence at all, and you still have primarily, you know, upper caste male writers writing from the perspective of how upper caste women think and do things. Matlab, baki to chhodi do. We're still stuck in that place, you know. And I think it would be interesting to just quickly give people a sense of who's behind the camera in India. So Film Companion did this survey with OMAX, and the number of female writers, 10%. Number of editors, 7%. Number of directors, 6%. Number of cinematographers, 2%. So here we're not even talking about any other kind of breakup, just the, you know, original token binary mein baate kar rahe hain, and this is where we're at.
So I have a question though. Like, Aditi, I mean, Shishi, you said that you don't, you've never watched The Office. Aditi, you seem like you have quite a bit, right? So matlab agar itni sari problems hai hum log ko, and if we do cringe sometimes when we watch that show and whatever, like be it Friends or The Office or How I Met Your Mother, Big Bang Theory, to be like, why do we still do it? Like, why is the fandom so dogged and persistent and pervasive even today? I have a theory, but I want to ask you guys first.
Because these shows are very easy to consume, right? Like, The Office is so, it's one of those like unique things which anyone can laugh at, because here it's got everything.
Shrishti is just shaking her head right now.
Okay, Shrishti, we get it. You're a film bro. We get it. You have...
No. From the opposite. Listen, when I was supposed to watch Office, it was supposed to be the cooler show. Exactly like what you said. I was like, mere ko ye samajh mein nahi aa raha kya hai, ye off karo. Bahut boring. So I was the audience. I was like, cancel Office. Let's watch Friends. Anyway, yeah, go on.
Yeah. So I think there are two kinds of people. The Office people and the Friends people. But like, both of these shows share that very specific commonality of it being easy to consume, of it being very short, quick, sweet, having those things in common, like, for example, like pranking, relationship troubles, more relationship troubles, some one funny character who's doing funny things. It sort of, it was like an aspirational form of friendship and companionship, and you like that sort of ambient noise while you're going through life. It's why it's, I think it's easy to binge all of these shows and a lot of times not even like interrogate their problematicness, because like if you wanted to watch like a less problematic show, you would go and find that less problematic show because that's available now.
So I see where you're coming from, right? Like I see it for somebody who's watching it maybe for the first time or the second time. Okay. But I mean, on social media, if you see people talking about these shows, right, it's more like a bragging situation where, oh, maine na like bara bar dekh liya start to finish ye. So like I think that part of the reason why we still are kind of consumed with whatever these shows like have to say is because a lot of like companies and like brands and OTT platforms won't let us forget only. Like in the sense that like Netflix, for example, spent I think 100 million or more than 100 million to keep Friends on air just for like another year, and then I think NBC later outbid them. Branding companies regularly use these memes and references that feed this fandom on social media all the time. Even I remember Pornhub tweeting when I think The Office was going to go off of Netflix, that, oh, please, you know, like, don't take this away from us humans. Like, Pornhub is tweeting this. I mean, of course, it's like a marketing strategy, you know. I feel like it's not just nostalgia, but it's like an active machine that is helping brands churn out this content every day. And it's one of the main reasons, at least for me, that I am not being allowed to forget about it.
I also think I want to add to this theory by saying that marketing and this audience development is a bit of a hoax. So that actually people don't research what do people want with my limited experience, what do people want to watch, or what, especially in TV and film. But you just think, okay, ye hit ho gaya, now let's make more of this or let's sell this to people more. You won't actually dig into or be able to experiment at a large scale about what does the audience want. Till someone experiments with something and then that's all they want and then that's all you give to them. So I think when you have such a super hit like Friends or The Office, and you know it's easy material for people around the world to consume, then you just push it more. I also feel like it comes from that time period when globalization was kind of 90s and 2000s is when, you know, this importing content from the West and all other countries consuming it, more of a one-way street was at its peak. So I also feel like it comes from that time, and different countries' ka obsession with it is also linked to that. Like today, I think there's much more like cross-cultural, like say Indians being crazy about Pakistani TV shows or like, you know, importing Arabic TV shows to different parts of South Asia. So I think now there's a lot more of that also. But these also come from that time when the West and US in particular had like this economic hegemony over sending us, not sending us, but like exporting all of these shows to different parts of the world. So I think that's also definitely a part of nostalgia for these particular decades' ka content.
Yeah, and like that reminded me of how little the audience is for such shows anyway. Like, for example, I want to see the difference between like the number of people who log into a Netflix account versus the number of people logging into Alt Balaji accounts on a daily basis, because like one is clearly and obviously winning. But like you won't see that if you look at like as our Netflix social media accounts, because they clearly, they're so confident about having everybody's attention there.
Okay, but I have one question. We've been talking a lot about like The Office and Friends, but what about Bollywood movies from the 90s and 2000s, aka Suraj Barjatya and Karan Johar have entered the chat. What do you feel about nostalgia for these, which is also like one huge, I think, part of the internet?
So I don't know if it's just like a Bombay branding company thing, but in the last like 1 or 2 years, like people have just really hit home with the K3G like memes and Kajol and Poo is such a big deal. I remember we were explaining Poo to Carla also at one point on this podcast. So yeah, it's definitely a very huge machinery going on for Bollywood movies also.
Yeah, like I think this is 100% like Rajvi says Bombay, I add diaspora to Bombay. I think it's a lot of like young kids who grow up in the like places like the US, the UK, Canada and all of that. And like they didn't grow up with aisa Bollywood movies. Like they're not gonna like go out of their way and watch something like, I don't know, like Tashan or something, or like Agent Vinod or something. Sorry, I'm just going off at Saif Ali Khan today. Yeah, like they're gonna watch the shit that they watched when they were kids, which is K3G. Like K3G was like the movie that they saw at that point. Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge, all of that stuff was happening when they were kids. And when they were sort of in that process of developing their own identity, as they grew older, obviously, like, there was no necessity to, like, watch those shows, like, that your parents impose on you. So you can just watch whatever you want. So after that, suddenly when it became sort of cool to be nostalgic again, everybody was like, oh, when I was a child, I remember I watched K3G and how fun was Pooh. And I was, and yeah, I mean, like, that did really well. A lot of diaspora kids could relate. And that same energy came to, like, even India-based branding of these, like, memes and shows. A certain media company, name starting from B, big part of this plague that was inflicted upon us by virtue of memes.
I think I thoda sa agree with you, but I do think that we were talking about self-awareness before, right? Self-awareness of the shows before. Like this, whatever, meme culture around K3G, let's take that as an example, but there are many other movies for which, like, this is being done. I do think that there is...
Sorry, I have to mention Renuka Shahani falling down the stairs in Hum Aapke Hain
Kaun. Yeah. It's a big deal, yes. I agree with you. So I do think that this nostalgia is like a combination of irony and nostalgia, in the sense that this fandom is also quite self-aware, in the sense that you, like, people have like K3G watch parties and they laugh at it, right? But like they want to keep continue laughing at it. So in that self-awareness, do we still think that K3G is problematic, in the sense that okay, matlab kafi gender roles hai, bahut lambi movie hai, bahut loud movie hai. Matlab most people would not call it cinema, but now there is like a big horde of people who will defiantly defend the movie. So like, do you think we lose out on anything by like doing this self-aware ironic glorification?
Yeah, dude, like irony becomes almost habit eventually, you know, like the more irony you do. Like, for example, remember that time when like swag was a big thing? Everybody was like, oh, legends have class, boys have swag. And then ironically, everybody started saying swag. And now swag is just like, it, after a while, it just became common parlance to say swag. Like it genuinely meant something to people who were even like irony pilled. I think after a while, these shows start meaning something to you, and then you only start watching shows like this. Like there was like a period where I only watched bad TV because like that's all I wanted to do. Because I wanted to laugh. Like I wanted to watch back-to-back roadies auditions because it made me laugh, and like I felt better than these people who were being silly on TV. But yeah, it takes away from your ability to explore, I think, like irony watching things. I think it's like a good one-off, but like if you build an entire ecosystem around it, an entire identity around it, it's a bit like, move on.
This is interesting, okay, because like if we assume fandom to be a habit, like of these shows, right? It is a habit because people have had this habit for a very long time. This habit has also been cultivated over a decade for most people. I feel like waisa fandom, it may not be possible to have for things that come into like streaming platforms or online, whatever, like now, because I guess of the speed with which they're coming at us. Because friends, for example, rose school se aake dekhte the baithke, ek hi episode ke 50 reruns ho chuke hain, like and then you know, like you kind of sit with the fandom for a very long time. But I feel like today it's kind of hard to do that just because of all the different, 1,000 different directions in which your attention is being demanded. So I'm not sure if the fandom that we come to know as Friends fandom or The Office fandom can actually be replaced, because it probably is just like a very different kind that may not be possible anymore.
I don't know. I mean, I think going back to the Bollywood example, because I was just thinking about that, I think again, it has the same problem with Friends and Office, which is that it makes you think that this era equals this movies, right? But at the same time, you had like a Filhal by a Meghna Gulzar, who was still making that movie, or you had a My Brother Nikhil, which is like a really interesting movie too, or you had like so much of Rituparna Ghosh's work then, and I'm just talking about the movies which I was exposed to at that point in time, right? So I feel like the problem with nostalgia value for pop culture is that, I think like you pointed out, Rajvi, that there are companies behind like pushing it and like reinforcing it. So I feel like the very same shows which at that time were doing really well because of market demands, like Friends and Office because of like globalization and wo market, and K3G, Karan Johar and Suraj Bhai Jaate because of NRI market, somehow they're doing well yet again with this whole irony watching thing, you know? And I think that just seems unfair, because if you're looking back at an era, you should probably, I think we want to look back at all of the cinema and TV shows and give, I don't know.
I think another problem is just kind of, which I guess is the so what of this entire podcast and why we're having it, right? Of course, about like whether it is actually harmful, like tangibly harmful to do this. So we know that pop culture is like a reflection of society, and then it in turn like influences society and societal behaviors and like thinking and stuff like that. There was a GLAAD study, I think, that found that queer representation in media like increases acceptance amongst cishet people among those who are not exposed to queer stories in media. So not just like what you accept in the content you consume, but also how much you accept the people who are around you. I think Marta Kaufman only was talking about Friends when she said that, I think we didn't have the knowledge about transgender people back then, so I'm not sure if we used the appropriate terms, right? The writers weren't very clear about whether they wanted to write like a cisgender drag queen or if they wanted to write a transgender person when they wrote Chandler's father. So all of this, looking at the popularity that a show like Friends has, right, I think it would be a bit reductive to be like, Friends did what they did at that time, but no big deal now. Because obviously there are many people who are kind of figuring out all of these things. So there's some kind of responsibility that comes on a show like that, especially if you want to keep promoting it and keep promoting it all the time.
I don't know, dude. Like, what I find really interesting is that why would we, like what could Marta Kaufman have done, right? Like, is it so unbelievable that Chandler was transphobic? Of course he was transphobic. He's like a wise guy. Of course, like, his other personality is a bigot. Maybe, I don't know, maybe like in sort of trying to fix these shows and sort of expressing regret, they're sort of trying to fit in with like the recent audience rather than like defending their show. You don't have to defend the fact that this person was problematic. You can just say, yes, this guy was a transphobic ass. And I mean, okay, like that's what he was supposed to be. Do you really think that like upwardly mobile rich people like Rachel and Chandler and I don't know, Ross were hanging out with like queer and trans folk in New York? No, they were not. They wanted to be in their own bubble. It's actually freakishly accurate representation of that time, if that time were put together by a very certain group of people, right? That's why people say it's a product of its time, because that time was practically written by white people, it was put together by white people, and it was only talking about a crowd that was very aspirational and desirable to look up to, which is basically upwardly mobile white people. I mean, it's, of course they were asses.
I agree with you, Aditi, in the sense that I don't think there is a way to fix these shows. I don't think anybody should ever even try to fix these shows. Like, I think there was like a blackface episode in The Office where Dwight comes as like the some kind of like essay devil person who kind of hits people with sticks. I forget the name. Yeah, there has been lots of talk of kind of going back and essentially like whitewashing problematic like storylines and stuff in TV shows, and that's something that a lot of like scholars are vehemently against, because you do not get to have absolution like that. Like, you do not get to have a show that in retrospect you can just edit out all the like missteps that you made at the time, right? So I think that even that's why it's all the more important to kind of keep doing this critique, right? And not to like succumb to the product of its time while I think, okay, product of its time, so now shut up. Like, that cannot be the answer. The answer has to keep critiquing this, keep talking about it as long as it's in like the cultural, like whatever space or whatever. because every time that, for example, somebody listens to this podcast where we're talking about all the problems with these shows, right? The next time they would sit, or I would sit to watch Friends, like when all these instances come, I would cringe and I would feel shame for having laughed like 15 minutes ago at something else. So I think more than like rosy nostalgia, it's okay and also healthy to kind of sit with that painful shame of it all, which perhaps can in the long run like make people just not watch it as often enough, and then it can slowly just fade away from memory.
As long as you're aware of the critique, like, it doesn't matter if you're watching the show right now, right? What are you doing at best? You're just like, you're not internalizing. You know a thing is cringy and transphobic. You're going to cringe through it. You're going to laugh at the rest of the show. But like, the show is not teaching you to be transphobic, and the show is not teaching you to be cringy. It's not that influential. It can't like beat what your brain is telling you. So I think you should be fine in that context. But like, don't irony pill it too hard.
Yeah, I think all in all, it's okay as long as it's critical and you're not contributing to money going into this more than you already have. I feel like that's where I'm going to end it. That's my last take on this. Cringe while you binge.
No,
no, cringe while you don't binge for more than
3 short time.
Well, I can't even watch some of these shows anymore, you know, like, but others I can. That's also interesting. Like, I can watch Friends, but How I Met Your Mother, I was like, oh my god, I have to find Barney charming at some point. What the fuck?
I'm judging a little bit, but I feel like that's calling for better reactions.